sounds true.
This podcast contains sexually explicit material and adult content. Mature audiences only. Listening discretion is advised.
Hey, everybody, and welcome to Pleasure, Playpen, Sex, Love, and Relationship Podcast. I'm here with Rose today, and we're going to be discussing some experiences that she's had with pet play. So, hello, Rose.
Hello, Stacey.
So, what kind of pet are you?
Well, as my username implies, I am a puppy. That's the one I identify with the most.
Now, are you submissive or dominant?
It depends on the situation. I'd say on the broad, I'm usually a submissive.
Okay. So why don't you tell us the very first time you decided to go and do pet play, what was that whole experience like for you?
Oh, wow. That was about 2 years ago, back when I was with an ex in Canada. And they first introduced me to the concept. I mean, I'd been familiar with it for some time, and they had a feeling that I might be into it. And, you know, they just started, you know, teasing, experimenting around with some different labels and said, like, you know, you really make me think of a puppy. And I went, yeah. And, you know, we had a little bit of a spontaneous encounter then where they used it and treated me like a pet, and it turned out I was very much into it.
So how did being treated like a pet, what did it entail?
So you mean just like in practicality or like
that time?
That time.
Yeah.
Well, that was just, you know, they had a little bit of BDSM gear on hand, like a leash and collar, all that fun stuff. But it was mostly just being degraded or teased in very pet-like ways, made to do quote-unquote tricks, which more or less involved the oral. But, yeah, and being called puppy, you know, that kind of stuff.
So did you do it often with that partner?
Absolutely. Actually, the thing was, it was basically once we did it that one time, it was like, it was less like, oh, I found out I like this, and more like a veil had been lifted. Like, I'd always liked it, and it was only just now getting to, like, engage with it. It was very rewarding, and the first time I asked to call them master was very difficult for me, just because it's so hard when you're new to that kind of stuff to like let go of the inhibitions around it and do something that sort of, you know, BDSM, any part of the scene is a little bit silly if you step outside the confines of a scene, but like letting go of that seriousness to like immerse yourself, that took a lot the first time.
I think doing that with any time you're trying something new sexually with a partner, it's like that awkwardness because you've never done it before. It's like, is it funny? Is it supposed to be serious? Is this is not normal for me to say these words? This is kind of awkward. You know, I think that's just normal.
Absolutely. And really, it also depends on, I feel like what makes or breaks a lot of people from kink the first time around is how good the person introducing them is at immersing them in the scene. Whereas if the person introducing them is also kind of unsure, it can be really difficult to navigate. But if they say it with confidence and really sell the headspace to you, you might find something you like.
So you have now been in it for 2 years, which is still kind of relatively new.
Yeah, all things considered.
You know, you're young in this, so to speak. Is it something that you do regularly?
It went from being a mild indulgence to a lifestyle over those 2 years. It's, like, I'm not somebody who, like, you know, I'm not fortunate enough to be a 24/7 puppy, but even then I don't think I'd have, you know, I enjoy a little bit of being human, but it's a it's definitely become a lot more important in my life in that time.
So every person, if you don't mind me asking, are you with someone currently?
Yes, I'm with several partners. I'm polyamorous.
Okay, and are these partners aware of that lifestyle? I'm assuming yes.
Yeah, now they are. Well, that's its whole other can of worms, is least likely person I ever assumed to like really open the door to talking about that stuff ended up becoming my boyfriend, and he's wonderful to me, and I was very surprised to hear my soft little guy talking about BDSM and opening up conversation about it.
So I'm guessing he's normally, like, he comes across as someone who's more, like, quiet, vanilla.
He's, you know, he's ace, typically, or has described himself as such in the past. And I would say that, from what I know about him so far, he's very... His headspaces are very, like, more into the platonic or romantic side of things, but... I guess I didn't expect him to be so curious about BDSM, but he's opened the gateway to me talking about being puppy with my core friend group as well. They're all aware of that. All of my partners are.
So what does, you say you have, that this is a lifestyle for you. So what does your day-to-day life consist of with it?
So... when I have my partners in the same space, you know, one or more in the same living space as me, it really depends on the partner's level of engagement with it or how committed they are to, you know, having me as a puppy. So day to day in that scenario, it's people don't think about how broadly platonic a lot of kink can be. Because let me reset this for a moment. The way that I like to describe being in the puppy headspace is it's almost never sexual until it is. In broad strokes, it's usually just as simple as having my head in someone's lap, they've been patting me, calling me a good girl, occasionally asking me to do tricks for them. Stuff like that. Different pets obviously have different routines or things that fulfill them. But, you know, just when I'm getting treated like a pet or a dog that somebody really loves, it's my favorite thing.
You said some of it is, I guess you could call it obedience training, because you said discipline or being punished.
Yes, that's a big part of the draw for me, at least.
So what does it mean to be punished by you? And are you being, do you do something as a puppy to be punished for?
I guess that really depends on the mood, huh? you know, as a masochist as well, there's definitely times where I try to evoke that response from my mistress, master, owner. But generally, I try to be a good girl. Which sucks because, again, masochist. You get deep enough in the headspace, you don't want to disappoint someone, but then there's that part of you that's like, God, just spank me or something. Find an excuse, please.
When you discovered this new, I want to call it a new personality of yours, or maybe a personality that was totally there, but you didn't know it.
That's pretty accurate, yeah.
Was it almost like cathartic to you because you get this extra attention as a puppy? You know, you said you want to lay in the lap of your master and get the pets and the good girls and things. Is it kind of cathartic in that respect?
Oh, yeah. Actually, I had put together, you know, I didn't know how much structure there was to this. I put together some talking points, and one of them was what I get out of being puppy. One of the best parts of it is what I would describe as catharsis. There's a lot that on like as like a baseline, I think people get out of being a pet or that I would get out of being puppy in general. Part of that is just getting to, for a little bit, let go of all the human problems. Like, it's a lot easier to forget about having to, like, the stresses of having to pay bills or find a good, stable job or get yourself moved into a new place. Lets you forget about that for a little. But something that's kind of unique to my experience is I have ADHD. And there's a lot of traits that in public society we treat as shameful or something to be guilty over because we're human, like being forgetful, having a short attention span, getting a little too excitable or passionate about something silly. But those are traits that are normal and charming about dogs. So being in the puppy headspace really lets me just be happy to be who I am.
What does looking like a puppy mean for you?
I am not someone who likes the hoods. Which is something worth mentioning because I can see the merit in them. I think BDSM has a lot to do with, and why BDSM has a lot to do with masks or face coverings is because for a lot of people, it helps them to draw a line or a distinction between these two personalities. And it can help ground them in the headspace without, you know, like the shame that can sometimes rise up in the aftermath. And I'm sure there's hundreds of other reasons, but for me, there's just, I don't like the distinction that it draws between me and being puppy because it's so fundamental to me now.
So do you dress up? Do you wear anything besides a hood? Obviously not a hood, but, you know, are there other pieces in your wardrobe that...
Yes, actually. So there's some accessories that are fun depending on the scene. You know, there's some people like to use the leg bindings and the paws because, you know, obviously puppies don't use hands. I've got this fun bone-shaped gag. That's always good for a, you know, a more degrading scenario. But I feel the part that most people are curious about when they think about BDSM, but in particular pet play, which is the collar. And there's a lot of, you know, context in the community, let alone in like personal day-to-day life that comes with that. Like something that nobody ever talks about, which is like what happens when you break up with somebody who gave you a collar. That's a thing that I've recently had to deal with, and yeah, there's definitely some advice that I could give in that respect, but for what it's worth, a collar really does enhance the scenario for me. It really, really makes you believe that you're owned by somebody.
So you don't have your own collar that's yours. You have one that's been, like, that you found that you like. You have one that's been given to you by...
Well, that was the thing. It's, there's... In the community, there's a distinction between the two. There's like a play collar, which is one that you own or the person engaging in the scenario with you owns. That's not really tied to anybody. It's just one you like. And then there's a collar, just something. For some people in like the puppy area particularly, that's like a wedding ring to them. Something that comes out of a committed relationship. And, that was where I got my first collar, was from that scenario. So that's been difficult. You know, there was a time where, you had to separate this identity that's fundamental and important to you from the person who helped you discover it. And because of like the dynamic that's intrinsic to that, that can be very messy.
That makes sense, because you don't want to ruin or lose your identity because you break up with someone, you know.
Precisely.
And I've had a couple of people, I've actually talked to someone else who identifies, and she says that she identifies as a cat. That is, you know, what she is. She actually makes pet gear.
Wow.
Yeah. And she's blind, which boggles my mind of how amazing her stuff is. She does all this yarn work, and it's so pretty.
Aww.
Yeah, she's amazing. She's just, what she does, she identifies herself as a cat. And so I find that's interesting that it is, like, to her, an identity. Is that kind of, for you, is it kind of the same thing? Or is it just how you identify when you want to get into that headspace?
I think that's the primary, the real difference worth making or distinguishing is that for some people, it really is just for play. And then for others, like me, it is more of a 24/7 way you feel. It's the default for me. Whereas, like, being dominant or any other headspace that I can kind of pull myself into, being a puppy is just kind of the easiest one because it's always on. I've got a few different partners who all engage with it in various levels. My boyfriend at the moment, he loves it, but he doesn't engage with it very deeply. He just knows how much it means to me and engages with it whenever the urge strikes him. And I very much love and appreciate that he does that. Like one of the most recent things he did say was the next time that we meet up, he's gonna go take me on a date, and one of the things he's gonna do for me on that date is take me shopping for a new toy. It's so cute. And then there's my mistress, who is like, yeah, let's get you a kennel. And I'm like, fuck yes, please and thank you.
Do you go out in public wearing anything, collars or leashes or anything?
I would sometimes go out in public with my collar, especially on the days where, you know, I'll go into this a little. One of the things that really is a benefit to having a collar tied to someone, and if you're confident in how long that relationship can last, is if you're lacking closeness to them emotionally, physically, or literally, it can keep you feeling connected to them, even when you're being silent. It reminds you of that bond you share. So usually when I would wear my collar out in public, it's that. But lately, now that I've gotten my own, that's mine. If I wear it out in public, it's more just, it is not overtly sexual. There's nothing people look at. They might give it a weird look and go, okay, that's odd. But there's so much other shit going on in the world right now. People are not going to care if you wear a leather collar. But it's kind of like my own little pride flag around my neck.
Mm-hmm. It's like jewelry.
Yeah.
Like when, you know, someone gives you a piece of jewelry that they picked out specifically for you, it makes you feel good and that they're thinking about you, that type of thing.
Yeah. And then there's not the inverse, they're not necessarily mutually exclusive. The sort of pride that it brings you to wear it. You're like, this is me. Or in the case of having it from someone, this is our bond. This is how important it is to me. So there's a rush from wearing it in public, but that could be just the exhibitionism talking.
So there, you said there were some talking points that you wanted to touch on. Were there any other ones that we did not talk about?
Oh, there's a big one. And I actually got to engage with this just as recently as a few days ago from another puppy girl. We had a little bit of a chat about how traditionally male-centric puppy spaces in particular, And one of my experiences in trying to get deeper into it and find a sense of community was that there are some men who really latch on to it. Not in a way where they embrace it more and they feel a sense of protectiveness over the idea. And there are some people more accepting of female puppies than others. And I wouldn't say that it's a predominantly aggressive or hostile space, but there are a lot of hostile spaces. And one of the most intimidating factors was most of the resources I could find on puppy play in particular had this air of tradition and this feeling of restrictiveness and exclusion that drew me into kink in the first place. I wanted to escape those things and ended up bopping straight snoot first into them. But once you dig past that, it's a matter of finding the right people who are there for the same reasons as you.
Is there a kink community that you belong to, or do you do this strictly personal?
I think I am a part of the pet play community on a broader scale now, but there's, it's obviously not the only kink I have. I've mentioned a few others just offhandedly. Some more taboo than others, but pet play is definitely one of those that you see like a lot of public scorn for, which is part of what makes it so impenetrable at times. Because if you escape the sort of public perception of it, then you get into the community or you play around with the idea a little and try to look for resources. You find a lot of people who are telling you that you can't really be a puppy or you can't really be a pet if you feel like this or that. And try to put conditions on your identity that you just don't line up with. I think it's been a journey of finding people who really understand that it's not so much this set of rules that you fall under and more a celebration of self and all these fun ways you can express yourself. If there was... Oh, I broached the subject, but I never actually said what I wanted to about how to move on from it.
What do you mean by move on from it?
When you had a partner who, yes, and it was particularly rough for me because this was the partner who introduced me to the kink. So I'll say that FetLife as a website has helped me sort of connect to other people and see I'm not alone in that department. And find like specific enough subsects of the group that I can like really talk to other people about how they feel and what it means to them. But I think reclaiming the identity is important in those scenarios. Like the first thing I did was I put my collar away. I put it in a place where I can't see it. And my goal is to one day sort of take it back as my own after all the pain has wore off and, once the bitter has left the bittersweet, probably clip the tag off at some point and just let it be my play collar. But doing puppy things to yourself or pet things for yourself that a puppy would do regardless of if it had somebody looking over it. Just play with yourself, be your own playmate for a while, and sort of take some distance from the dynamic of it and delve deeper into the headspace. And I feel like that's the best way to move on and heal from something that was that intimate.
Mm-hmm. especially if it's a bad breakup or one that was one-sided where it wasn't your decision. I'm sure it's just like anything, you know, when someone breaks up an engagement and you have that piece of property that really makes you think about that person that you really don't want to get rid of. But at the same time, you don't want to wear it because you don't like looking at it until you get to that point where you can finally say, no, it's okay.
Absolutely. There's a thing that gets lost in the, or caught in the crossfire a lot, is that no matter how bad things ended, you became part of this person's life for a reason. They meant something to you, and that bond was important to you. That's the reason you kept it around so long. It's okay to have good memories of bad relationships or good memories of bad people, because bad people can do good things. And there's no shame in admitting that something was special to you or meant a lot to you, even if the person no longer does.
Mm-hmm. I'll tell you, bro, you know, you don't want to change the experiences you've had because that's how you became the person you became. As shitty as those experiences may have been.
It's... You know, as a trans woman, like, there was a big, very first parts of transitioning that you learn is you can't fully disconnect yourself from who you were, because that person still had parts of you, even if they weren't all authentic. This person protected you while you figured out who you wanted to be for the rest of it. This person is who helped you shape all of your interests, grew you into who you are now. And while not all the memories are pleasant of that time in your life, they're all important, and they make you who you are.
Thank you so much for coming on today with me.
Likewise.
I greatly appreciate it. Would you ever be interested in doing an interview about polyamory?
Oh my gosh. Yeah. I've actually... If you want to do this again at any time, let me know, because I've got at least 3 other big things I can talk about that are a little bit hard to find information on. If I could, there's something I'd like to leave you and anybody listening off with. It's, I mentioned it briefly when talking about how inapproachable the pet play community can be. One of the deepest, saddest shames of communities like the BDSM, kink community, the LGBT, there is this proclivity to defend something even when it doesn't need defending, because you are so used to it coming under fire that it can be genuinely hard to trust that somebody is asking something in good nature. So, if there's anything I want to leave anybody listening off with, it's... One, keep an open mind. You might have impulses or ideas that were framed by people not in the community. And if you're somebody who wants to educate people but isn't sure if they're being disingenuous, trust that people are at their heart good-natured, even if they aren't sure how to be. You can be the person who makes a change in someone's life.
There you go. I like that. Assume that they're better than they might be, but if it comes across that they aren't, well, so be it.
All you have to do is just not.
Exactly.
All right, well, we're done here.
Well, thank you again, Rose, for joining me today. I really do appreciate you opening up, and we'll definitely be back. I'll message you in a little bit, and we'll schedule the other meetings we can do.
It's been an absolute pleasure, Stacey. I hope to see you again soon.
Thank you.